Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. 6.2 million people in the U.S. have been identified as COVID-19 positive. More than 187,000 have died. In Pennsylvania, 139,000 have tested positive and over 7,700 died. There are hot spots around the country where more people are contracting the virus or at least testing positive. Everyone is aware of the steps that have been taken to mitigate spread of the virus. But the most effective way may be contact tracing, identifying and informing people who have been exposed to another person who has contracted COVID. Pennsylvania has about 1,200 contact tracers, but needs at least three times that many. The state is introducing a mobile phone app that could help identify and inform those exposed. To talk more about contact tracing and the app, Pennsylvania's Department of Health Deputy Secretary for Health Innovation, Meghna Patel. Deputy Secretary Patel, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. Good morning.
And also Communications Director for the Department of Health, April Hutchison. April Hutchison, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Scott. Glad to be here.
If you have a question or a comment about contact tracing, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532, or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. I want to start, and either one of you can answer this question, but start with kind of the broad question. Is contact tracing the best way to slow down or stop the spread of the virus?
So, Scott, there's a lot that we can do to stop the spread of the virus. Contact tracing is a really great way for us to find out, first of all, if I test positive, someone will reach out to make sure that I'm okay, that I have the health care that I need, and then find out who I've come in contact with. And then through our contact tracers, they can reach out and let somebody know that they've been exposed to the virus. But we know that that can be, you know, difficult to remember every place that you've been or every place that you go. And that's where Meghna's team has created this app that will help with that process.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk more about the app in just a moment, but first just want to identify and define contact tracing and ask a few questions about contact tracing, April. When someone is contacted, what are some of the questions asked?
So first and foremost, if you have a question that you've been reached by a contact tracer and you want to make sure that it is someone, you can collect their information, call us at 877-PA-HEALTH. And we will be able to verify that it is a contact tracer who is reaching out to you. So that's really important. But they're going to ask you, you know, first of all, if I tell you that I've been in contact with somebody, that person will never know that it was you. So my information and your information is always anonymous. We make sure to protect your privacy. And we're trying to really find out where have you been? Who have you possibly been in close contact with? Remembering back, who I've been in close contact with for 10 or 15 minutes, was I, at a restaurant? Was I at a shopping mall? Was I at the grocery store? Was I at a pharmacy? So really trying to help you retrace your steps so that we can inform individuals that they may have been exposed, check their symptoms, and potentially see if they need to be quarantined.
April, I have heard stories that there are some people who haven't been cooperative, that whether it's because they're concerned about privacy or whatever reason, that they won't answer the phone or that they don't want to answer questions because they're afraid other people will find out. What kind of cooperation rate do you get?
So we do, for every positive case, we do a case investigation within 24 to 48 hours. It can be difficult sometimes for people to recall everyone that they've been in contact with, but for the most part, and with every disease that we've encountered, Ebola, measles, even the flu, people have been very cooperative with contact tracing. One of the key things that we try to do is, through our laws, make sure that your identity is completely private. So if you test positive for any kind of disease in Pennsylvania, your information is protected under the Disease Prevention and Control Act. So we want to make sure that you have that affirmative right to privacy. Sometimes, you know, obviously we've had a lot of discussion about that law, but that at the heart of it is why we need that law and what it does. And then what it also does is it makes sure that we are also bound to protect your privacy. So any information that we collect is completely confidential. We are legally not able to share it with anyone. And we make sure that we are keeping your data safe. When you participate with a contact tracer, obviously it's a very lengthy process, but these folks are highly trained to be able to help you recall where you've been, who you've been in contact with, but most importantly, to see how you're feeling and what your symptoms are. So it is a very positive process, and often folks have said that they were happy to have someone reach out to them and have that one-on-one discussion.
But do you have, or I should ask, is it a challenge, though, to get people to participate?
Well, I think that there are a lot of misconceptions about what contact tracing actually is. And so that's part of what we're trying to achieve here. We do have enough contact tracers in Pennsylvania to handle the caseload that we have now. So that's really great news. And really, participation has been rather good. But we are, you know, we are constantly concerned about folks not wanting to pick up the phone. And so we want to explain what that process is and make it as easy as possible for them.
I want to talk about the number of contact tracers you have and how many you're looking to get a little bit later in the program. But something you mentioned right up front when you talked about contacting the Department of Health, I'm sure that, you know, one of the reasons to do that is to make sure that the person contacting you actually is a contact tracer that is related, you know, to the Department of Health. I'll just ask these questions right up front.
Sure.
These people will not ask about credit card numbers. They won't ask for Social Security numbers, anything like that, right?
They will not ask that kind of identifying information. And from a public health standpoint, we don't need that identifying information. So, no, they'll ask for your date of birth. They'll ask for your residence. They'll ask for your gender identification and some other demographic information, race, ethnicity, things like that, to help us determine where the virus is spreading and in which communities it's spreading and who's impacted by it. But they'll never ask you for any financial information, your Social Security number, or anything that is protected.
What should someone do if they get a call like that, that obviously is from a scammer?
So if they do get a call from a scammer, we have worked with specifically with the Department of Aging to protect our seniors who may be getting those calls and may have some confusion. And so they have resources on their website, as well as the Attorney General of Pennsylvania. And the Attorney General also has resources available and information where you can report individuals who are trying to scam you.
Okay. And we will have some more questions about contact tracing a little bit later on. But let's talk about the app. Deputy Secretary Patel, how does this app work?
Yeah, so like April mentioned, Pennsylvania has used contact tracing as a tool to stop the spread of infectious diseases for decades. Today, our disease investigators reach out to every single positive case in the individual in Pennsylvania. And through that phone call investigation, they try to understand who they came in close contact with. Now, this is done so public health can reach out to the close contact and alert them saying that they might have been exposed. So they can monitor themselves, get tested, stay at home, and take precautions. Basically, our disease investigators and contact tracers effectively try and slow the spread of COVID-19. But here's the problem that we're trying to solve with an exposure notification app. During these disease investigation interviews, a positive COVID-19 individual could only name their family members at their home potentially their neighbors or even extended family or friends when they try and recollect who they came in close contact with. If this positive COVID-19 individual went to a grocery store or a food pickup line or a pharmacy store and interacted with a stranger, a probably not social distance, whom they cannot identify or even provide contact of. Now, this stranger came in close contact with the positive COVID-19 individual and had no idea that they were exposed. So they will go out and about performing their routine work completely unaware and continue to spread the virus. So what essentially this app does is through the app, we use the same Bluetooth technology that is used to connect a phone to a car when someone wants to listen to music. The app is basically determining proximity using Bluetooth and alerting individuals if they come in close contact with someone who gets tested positive for COVID-19. It can alert you so you can get tested, reducing your risk of spreading the virus to your friends, to your family, and larger community. There's absolutely no location or GPS or geolocation used. The phone doesn't even enable any of that. And there's no means for the app to collect this information. It's fully anonymous. It only works well if everyone downloads this app. It's a voluntary app and people can opt in. So Pennsylvanians can do the right thing here to stop the spread and do this entirely by staying anonymous.
You just touched on one of the big questions that I had, and that is that for this to be successful, it will take a lot of people to download the app and participate, correct?
It is, yes. And so even if in a small sort of community, if people have downloaded this app, even if one life is saved through this alert, it does help. But the larger purpose here is that we want to ensure that every single Pennsylvanian downloads this app.
By the way, what is the app called?
It's called COVID Alert PA.
Wow, that's easy enough. COVID Alert PA. Now, it hasn't started yet. When will it start? Because I can guarantee you, I'm already getting some questions from listeners about whether it's available. When is it available?
The app will be available for download in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store this month. It is important that as we get as many Pennsylvanians as possible to download the app. So it's coming up this month.
When you say this month, can you be any more specific?
I can't give specific time frame just because we're in a pilot in a testing phase. And so certainly mid-September is something that we're looking for here.
And, of course, that will be publicized, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. We'll have more on this app and other contact tracing questions in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II. A little history talk on tomorrow's Smart Talk, so be sure to tune in. During this segment of today's program, we're talking about contact tracing and a new app that will be available to Pennsylvanians to contract trace people who have been exposed to the COVID-19 virus. Our guest today is Pennsylvania Department of Health Deputy Secretary for Health Innovation Meghna Patel and Communications Director April Hutchison. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Deputy Secretary, we have a question here from Raj in Chambersburg who asks, how will the privacy of citizens downloading the app be taken care of? And if I get an alert on my phone, how do I contact someone from the Department of Health?
So that's a very great question here. It's always hard to separate the facts versus misinformation. So like I said, we're using the same Bluetooth technology that anyone uses to pair the phone with a wireless headphone or connect their phone with a car. The app does not collect any personal information or even track or collect location information. So as someone gets an alert, an exposure alert, In the app, they have two options. They can read the instructions provided by the public health on the exposure information, and that's a similar sort of instruction we provide to individuals who are exposed during our traditional contact tracing. But, you know, human nature, there's many reasons for people to experience a panic situation, and they might want to talk to a public health representative at that point. So we do give an option for people to call back or request a call back from the Department of Health. And when we get a request for call back, our contact tracers will do an excellent job here to reach out to that individual and, you know, through the traditional contact tracing, try to understand if they have any symptoms, if they should stay at home, quarantine, and take care of themselves.
Scott, one thing just to add to that. So on your phone, when you download an app, it'll ask you to use your location services. Like if you do a Google search, it'll say, you know, do you want it to allow you to use your local, you know, where you are right now and to turn it on while you're using the app or all the time. This app doesn't ask you for any of that information. So it doesn't actually enable any of the location services in your phone. What it does is it uses our phones. Use Bluetooth all the time to talk to all different types of devices, and that's the technology it uses. So it remains completely anonymous, but it doesn't track your locations.
April, I'd imagine there's a trust issue involved in that, though. I mean, at a time when many people know that, or at least suspect that their privacy rights can be violated, I imagine that is one of the biggest challenges you're going to face with this, is that people think that their privacy may not be kept secret, put it that way.
So I think that's one of the things, even from, and Meghna can talk about this as well, from on the technology development, Apple and Google in developing the back-end technology on all of this, were very cognizant of that very fact, that we need to have something that enables our phones to communicate with one another without actually tracking where we've been so that people will participate in these types of programs. And so that's actually one of the big keys. So we won't have an idea of who downloaded the app. We are not collecting information on whether you, Scott, have downloaded the app and whether or not you're using the app. It is completely anonymous. And that's really designed because we, again, may not know who we've come in contact with. And so it's really important when we participate with this that we're letting our community know if we are positive, because if I was at the grocery store at the same time you are and, you know, we were in close contact but I've never met you before, it's and you're positive, knowing that can help me prevent it spreading the virus to, say, my mother-in-law or my mother or, you know, my kids, that I can take steps to protect those folks as well.
April, let me pass along this email from Bill in Perry County. He says, my wife is trying to get tested after a coworker tested positive. She can't find testing at all, and she's starting to feel symptomatic. Do you have suggestions?
Yep. So please have her call 877-PA-HEALTH to talk to a community health nurse. And we will work to get her tested.
That number again, 877-PA-HEALTH.
Yes.
Okay. And one of the things he added, he actually called in, but couldn't stay on the line because he's on his way to a funeral. He said this is the seventh person he knows who has died of the disease. So that puts it out there that a personal experience, and lets people know that this is a dangerous situation. I have another question about the app. A listener wants to know, Latinos and other minorities have been disproportionately affected by COVID in certain areas of the state. Is the app and other services available at least in Spanish and or other languages? Deputy Secretary, what about that?
Yes, absolutely, Scott. The app is provided in English and Spanish.
Any other languages?
We're looking to see Pennsylvanians, and in terms of the languages that are most spoken, that data we're going to continue to look for. But at the moment, English and Spanish are the top. But there are obviously like Dutch, German, and other languages we'll continue to look for if our residents would like to have a third language preference here.
Let me just remind our listeners, we only have a few minutes left with our guest during this segment. If you have a question or a comment about the app or contact tracing, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@WITF. And on Twitter, we are at smarttalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Deputy Secretary, do we know whether this app actually works? Wallace McKelvey of Penn Live wrote a story I'm sure you're aware of that quoted some people with technical knowledge who questioned whether it will work even, say, between walls or, you know, geographically where you are. Do we know that this actually will work?
Yeah, so we know that, of course, Bluetooth is not accurate in all the real environment settings. It can react differently in different settings, such as thin walls, thick walls, metal environment, and so forth. We absolutely don't, none of us have a playbook here for COVID-19. Like social distancing, wearing a face mask, washing hands, and like downloading the app is one additional tool in the toolbox. This is a pandemic. We need to use all the tools available to us. Now, we have partnered with some of the brightest and the most respected in the industry to conduct that assessment of Bluetooth. We're partnered with MIT Lincoln Lab, the MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, the Internet Privacy Research Institute at MIT. They're working hand in hand with us and other states here to understand the efficacy of the Bluetooth. There's certainly the exposure notification system from Apple and Google allows public health to tweak the settings of these Bluetooth. And certainly this is getting too technical here, but you know, we have the ability to test and ensure that we can tweak those settings to not have too many false positive or false negative sort of alerts.
Okay, when you say false positive, false negatives, what do you mean? Because people relate that, they think of that and they think of testing.
Oh, yes, yes. No, I think the false positive could be that you're in two different rooms and there's a glass barrier and the Bluetooth picks you up as a close contact. And those are the type of testing we're doing right now in partnership with MIT Lincoln Labs to see how this is effective and whether it is picking up those false positives.
So has this been used other places, other states?
Actually, in other countries, too, and yes, in other states. So Virginia was the very first state here in the U.S. to go live. But certainly in other countries, especially in the European nations, and they have been very popular over there with their citizens and residents downloading this app.
You say it's been very popular, but has it worked? Okay, I'm not talking about the app itself. I'm talking about working as far as contact tracing those who have been exposed and maybe getting those people tested.
Yes, yes, so absolutely. This is a novel technology. And so with this novel technology, a lot of data collection has been done. There's obviously the European nations that have come together to bring up their data to understand how many alerts have gone out. So there have been over 400 some alerts. I'll take it Ireland as an example. They've had many alerts go out, and through those alerts, they've identified individuals who can go get tested. That in itself is a success. And that sort of has led that interpretation here on our side here in the U.S. that this is working well. This is actually alerting the individuals who come in close contact to someone who they don't know each other at all.
You know, April, I kind of want to follow up on the question that the caller asked a few minutes ago when he was talking about his wife that hasn't been able to get tested. You know, one of the points that he was making is that testing isn't available everywhere and that we need to do more testing before we can actually contact trace. What about that? I mean, that obviously seems to be one of the issues that not just Pennsylvania has dealt with, but the entire country, is that we need more testing.
So, you know, Scott, we have been working so hard in Pennsylvania to increase our testing. We have over 450 testing sites, from local pharmacies to hospital locations. And even now, you know, just last week we announced a mobile testing unit going around to 16 different counties to provide testing as well. But yes, you know, from a national perspective, we, you know, in terms of our testing capabilities, the reagents that are required to do the test, the swabs to take the samples, and even the testing capability within labs, you know, within our commercial lab system to be able to process the test. We do, we are watching it very carefully and really concerned about its growth. But what we're continuing to do is really support that effort throughout Pennsylvania with, you know, we've through the Department of Community Economic Development, have invested in a company called OraSure, which is developing a rapid test, which means that I could take the test at home or, you know, at my doctor's office and get the results back in 15 minutes versus waiting even 24 hours to get the test back. But we are, you know, within this country, as we see different parts of the country have outbreaks, you know, we're seeing cases increase throughout the Midwest. They're on the rise again throughout the South. And in Pennsylvania, we have kids heading back to school. So we're obviously very concerned and watching things very closely. That testing capability is key to letting us know how we're doing and who is actually experiencing COVID-19 and not some other virus.
You know, a couple of the issues you mentioned we've discussed on the program here recently, and that is the upcoming flu season and people getting a flu shot. Since symptoms are very similar between COVID and flu, that it could create another challenge come this fall. We're in this fall with kids going back to school and all that. But
right.
There's that, and yet just yesterday we talked about, with Latino Connection, about the mobile unit. Jan asked, we have listener Jan who asked, due to increased spam phone calls, I don't pick up if I don't recognize the number or name of caller. If a contact tracer does call, will he or she leave a message with identifying information so that I can return the call? Or I could possibly even pick up and answer the call as they were leaving the message. I would hate to not respond if I believe it is spam or did not receive an authentic tracer call. What about that, April?
So, you know, Scott, that's a good question in terms of whether or not they'll leave a message. Typically, you know, we do want to talk to that person individually. If they're calling from the Pennsylvania Department of Health, then it will come up on caller ID as the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania or the Pennsylvania Department of Health. So you know that that is where that person is calling from. But if they do leave you a message, please, please, please return that phone call. It's really important that someone speaks to you just to even check in on your health and make sure that you're not experiencing symptoms or that there might be steps that you can take to prevent exposure to other people within your family. So please make sure to pick up those calls, and if they leave you a message, please make sure to return it.
April, you said the state has enough contact tracers right now. There's just over 1,200 contact tracers. I spoke with Dr. Levine, Secretary of Health, a few weeks ago, said we need more. Johns Hopkins says Pennsylvania needs 3,800 if you want to have the accepted rate of 30 per 100,000 people. Dr. Levine has said the state has a goal of over 4,000. I think it's like 4,500. What's taken so long to get contact tracers, the number that you want and need?
Well, you know, it's funny because when you're looking at contact tracing, it is a system that you build up over time. So, you know, of the 1,200, you know, we have signed a contract for a staffing agency to bring in more folks. We have volunteers, and we've monitored more than 9,335 contacts during case investigations in just 1 week. So it does take a ramp up. There is an education process because we want to have people properly trained to be able to ask the questions, be able to provide responses. And so it does take time. You know, it isn't necessarily a field that folks are going into automatically and we can suddenly put out a call and say, let's have, you know, 3,000 contact tracers by next week. And there's a process that we have to go through. But within, you know, with where we're at right now, Pennsylvanians are doing such a great job at making sure that they are taking the right precautions. You know, we have remained steady in terms of our cases. We want to see it go down, obviously, but we are not at the point where, say, Iowa, that's seeing 1,100 new cases a day, or even where Florida at one point was seeing 13,000 cases a day. And so it's a combination of having the proper people trained and bringing all of those people on board, which is what we're doing right now and continuing to add. In the last week, we added 132 people. So we're continuing to add to that, to those resources. But it's also a part of Pennsylvanians are continuing to do the right thing to stop the spread. And it really starts with all of us.
Well, as far as Pennsylvanians doing the right thing, that's a good thing, obviously. But when we're talking about contact tracing, it would seem to be that the time is of the essence here. You say it does take time to get these people trained. Obviously, you don't want people who don't know what they're doing calling people and saying, oh, by the way, you may have been exposed. How long does that training take? I mean, I don't know. It just seems like with so many people unemployed that there would be a lot of people out there who would like to participate in this, become employed and to participate in this to do a good thing.
So, we did hire, like I said, we did hire a staffing agency to help with that process. And then we also know that a lot of our health partners are also participating in this process. So, you know, you have folks within this area with Penn State Health or Geisinger Health that are also hiring and training contact tracers. There are courses that you can take to set yourself up if you're looking for a job to be a contact tracer. And then we're always looking for volunteers as well. And so there are a lot of students who are in graduate work in public health who are looking to get some more experience, and this is an excellent way to do it. But it does take time. It isn't something that's going to happen in a day or a week. And our teams have, you know, if you look at our first cases were identified in March, and our contact tracers traditionally had been our network of community health nurses, so a pretty smaller network of about 135 people, to here a couple months later, we're looking at over 1,200. That's a pretty significant increase. The folks who have gone through training, gone through the application process, and are today doing contact tracing.
Is it accurate that the state's goal is 4,500?
So right now, we are good at where we're at. We are continually monitoring where our cases are taking us. And so as we see increases, if we hit, for instance, a Florida where we hit 13,000 cases a day, which we hope we don't, then obviously we would need more. But we're continually assessing the need and the workload and adding to that.
Okay, so I just want to be accurate here. And so have you stopped hiring right now because the numbers have been leveled off?
We have not. We have not stopped hiring, and we still have that staffing contract in place where we're going to continue to onboard people to do contact tracing. We know that as we head into the fall, and we go from being an outdoor society over the summertime to an indoor society during the wintertime, combined with influenza, as you mentioned. Last year, by the way, we had the most cases of influenza, even since H1N1. So we know that we've got, you know, a pretty big influenza transmission going through our communities, that we're going to need even more support. And so to nail it down to a specific number, you know, what we can say is today we are in a good place, but we do want to continue to build capacity to prepare for the future.
Okay. Final word, Deputy Secretary Patel, on the app. You talked about it being available in mid-September. Again, what is it called and how can people download it?
So it is called COVID Alert TA, and in September it will be available for download in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. And we all encourage everyone to hear and Pennsylvanians to kind of add their phone to the fight in stopping the spread of COVID-19.
Deputy Secretary for Health Innovation Meghna Patel and Communications Director April Hutchison of the Pennsylvania Department of Health, thank both of you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health online at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.
Welcome back to WITF Smart Talk. A report on June sales figures from the National Alcohol Beverage Control Association found that Pennsylvania was the only control state in the country where spirit sales didn't increase by double digits and actually only went up by less than 1%. State wine and spirit stores were closed for the first weeks of the pandemic, and curbside sales were initially the only avenue for liquor purchases. Grocery stores have become the front line in this battle on other fronts as well, like food availability, supply chains, masks, hazard pay for workers, a number of things that a lot of grocery stores have had to deal with. Joining us is Alex Beloga, who is president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Food Merchants Association. Mr. Beloga, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Scott. Appreciate it.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Alex, what is the Pennsylvania Food Merchants Association's interest in the sale of liquor here in Pennsylvania?
So our members operate stores across the Commonwealth, grocery and convenience stores. We have wholesalers, distributors, consumer packaged goods companies, and others up and down the food supply chain. In our retail stores, our members sell wine and spirits products, again, across the Commonwealth in hundreds and now over 1,000 different locations. So we have a serious interest both from a business standpoint, but mainly from a consumer convenience standpoint, to provide our customers the products that they're looking to purchase when they come in the stores.
But during the time when wine and spirits shops were closed, your members were still able to sell beer and wine, those that were licensed to do so, correct?
Exactly, yes. Our members never stopped selling beer and wine throughout the entire pandemic, and in fact, they operated the entire time, making sort of split-second decisions and adjustments in their businesses to continue to operate. So we were on the front lines of that, as you mentioned, and the sales really never stopped. And in fact, we became sort of de facto, alcohol sales stores aside from spirits in the Commonwealth.
Well, that made me curious as to whether your sales of wine and beer actually increased during the weeks when the wine and spirit stores were closed.
The certainly overall foot traffic increased just across the board. Wine and sales, tracked with that as well.
So, you, when I was talking earlier in the introduction about how the sales increases that other states saw, in Pennsylvania it went up by like 0.6%. I think it's 0.06%. So, what do you think of that?
I think that's a major missed opportunity for the Commonwealth. Being the only state in the country that I'm aware of that totally shut down basically the one avenue for people to purchase spirits in any kind of mass quantity or larger quantities or across the whole state. I can't think of any other state that did that. And it was a considerable hit to the state budget, obviously, as well. Tax revenue and just overall sales revenue. It's basically a quarter of the revenue that the PLCB would normally see went up in smoke. So it was a major lost opportunity, which we thought we could have helped during that time in an emergency situation, but were not able to.
So let's talk about that. How could you have helped during that situation?
Well, we could have sold in a number of other states, and you saw this in a number of other states across the country, they allowed for emergency spirit sales. There were, I believe it was Ohio and New York, the mixed drinks to-go was an emergency allowance in a couple of other states as well, and obviously Pennsylvania enacted that also. So there were things that could have been done to allow us to sell those products, we think, through either emergency declaration or some kind of allowance from the PLCB. We did see that, again, in some other states where those discussions were had. And I believe, like I said, in New York, they were allowed to do that.
So a couple things that I'm hearing from you. But my question is, did you or your association, some of your members, approach the Liquor Control Board or Governor Wolf's office to say, hey, here's an opportunity for us to sell this product?
We did put that out there. We did reference that concept and make that offer, but it was just not really entertained.
What I also hear is it sounds like you're making the case for privatization as well.
We would certainly prefer to be able to sell the products. It's not as much about the elimination of the stores or, the PLCB as we know it. It's about customer choice and convenience for us. We think that wine sales have gone very well. And in fact, the PLCB, to their credit, has worked well with us on the wine sales front. So it's not really an indictment of them, so to speak, or, quote unquote, going for full privatization. It's a matter of providing the consumer the choice. And we think there's, frankly, enough room for everybody to operate if that's what it comes to. But we certainly would want to be able to sell it in the private market, no doubt about it.
So going forward, are you using this as, and maybe using this as an example, or, I don't want to make it sound like you're jumping on the opportunity here, but still, that going forward with privatization talks, I mean, every year there's legislation to privatize liquor stores, and there has been movement during the, some changes, big changes during the Wolf administration, being able to sell beer and wine in grocery stores and convenience stores. But is this something going forward in looking for privatization?
We want to be able to provide the customers the products that they want to buy. So if those are spirits, which we think that they are, if it's wine, if it's beer, we want to be able to sell those products. And we're willing to work with, as you mentioned, the Wolf administration. We've done that on the wine issue. We want to work with the legislature. And we want to provide that choice and convenience to the customer. So it's not just spirits. Spirits is part of it. But it's things like allowing for additional quantities to be sold, right? So we have limits on quantities. We have limits on where the product can be placed. It can't be put in the aisles. It has to be in a separate area. Those are the types of things that the consumer will see and will notice and will make the system better and will make it more efficient. So there's a whole host of things that we'd like to see done, but certainly spirits, better pricing on the wholesale side, amongst a number of other things, we'd like to work with the administration and the legislature to accomplish those things for the consumer.
Let's take a phone call from Derek in Wheeling, and that is West Virginia, Derek?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, I figured that, but we don't usually get calls from West Virginia. So, Derek, what's your question or comment?
Yeah, I actually just wanted to say that the fine gentleman from Harrisburg actually had a really good point about sales tax dollars dropping and not being able to contribute to Pennsylvania's recovery, because people in West Virginia travel across state lines into Pennsylvania to get better luxury vintages, better options that we don't have in West Virginia. And we were completely locked out of that market when Pennsylvania shut those down. So we weren't able to spend our out-of-state tax dollars in PA in a way that would you know, help Pennsylvania recover, you know, from this pandemic. So I just thought that that was a really good point. And from an outside perspective, coming from West Virginia into Pennsylvania, he has another good point where, you know, some of the restrictions just come across as arcane and silly, where, you know, you just can't purchase things as normal. So I just wanted to call in and say we would love to see improvements from Pennsylvania along the lines of what he's suggesting.
Derek, thank you very much for your call. That's kind of an unusual call. Usually we hear it the other way around, that Pennsylvanians are traveling to other states for lower prices or for some other reason. Have an email here, Alex. Many Pennsylvania residents living near the borders travel to other states to purchase their liquor. Again, what kind of the opposite of what Derek was describing. Did the neighboring states also receive Pennsylvania grocery shoppers?
No, I don't think to any substantial degree, because the retailers, the food merchants, were operating the entire time. I'm not aware of any sort of cross-border bleed in regards to those retail food merchant sales. And in fact, that they were operating the entire time and they were open and operating safely, I have not heard anything along those lines.
I guess what the caller is suggesting, though, is that if someone decided to cross state lines and buy their liquor out of state in a, say, in a grocery store somewhere where they're selling food, that out of convenience they may just decide to buy their groceries there rather than in Pennsylvania.
And that could happen, and that's what happens with the sales, as you mentioned. That's what happens with the sales of alcohol many times, is people go across the border to places like Delaware and buy the product cheaper, you know, more efficiently. But as far as food sales, we haven't seen a lot of that. I don't think there's been any tracking or data that I could refer to, but I haven't heard anything or seen anything to sort of corroborate that. It's possible. Certainly, if people are crossing state lines to buy those products, then they may stop and shop somewhere else. But in the middle of a pandemic, you know, if you can go to your local grocer and buy beer and wine, I think most likely what had happened is what we saw, which is the spirit sales took the hit and not really retail food sales.
Let's talk a little bit about that. You know, during this pandemic, there have been times where there was a meat shortage for a while there. So I'll just ask the question right now, is meat and all cuts of meat, all types of meat, is that a good supply right now?
Yeah, the shortages have dropped off somewhat. There's still issues intermittently with product. Obviously, the wipes, the Clorox wipes and other things that have been reported on are still sort of recovering. But overall, the supply, meat and other items are actually coming back pretty close to full strength and pretty consistently.
Let's go at the other end, toilet paper.
That seems to be fine. I'm not hearing any issues there.
Well, are there still restrictions in stores on the number of rolls or product that can be purchased?
No, I haven't seen any restrictions in quite some time.
Supply chain issues. Again, this was something I think we spoke a few months ago about that. Any supply chain issues right now?
The supply chain really has held pretty strong and steady. It rebounded from the initial shock, which everyone experienced. And, you know, as I mentioned, I think a couple months ago I mentioned that as more places opened, the strain would decrease. And we're seeing some of that. Some schools are opening in person. We see different industries reopening, and that's taking some of the pressure off of specifically the grocery food merchant chain, so to speak, the supply chain.
As you could probably hear our music here, Alex, we're almost out of time. Real quick, problems with customers wearing masks, and I have to restrict you to like 10 seconds or so.
It's better, but there's still issues, and we just ask everybody to help out and do your part and wear a mask. It'll keep everybody open.
Alex Beloga is president and CEO of the Pennsylvania Food Merchants Association. Alex, thank you very much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the end of World War II. Later in the week, the coin shortage due to the pandemic. That's coming up later on Smart Talk.